You might open up your Bibles again to the book of James, and we'll be looking there again this morning as we continue a series of lessons that we began last week talking about our technology and how we make usage of that, or how it makes usage of us, as the case may be. And hopefully we are the ones who are, you know, at the helm of that boat. We referenced last week James chapter 3, in which James had some very, very strong language regarding the tongue. And he says in verse 2 in particular, "For we all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well." And I think it's a good comparison for us to take something like the tongue, which is obviously a valuable thing. It's a creation from God. It's something God's given us for good purposes. And yet all of this language that warns and says, think of the damage that you can do. Think how careful you must be not to go astray. To the point that James says, if you can grab hold of this and if you can harness this and not make a mess with your tongue, then you are doing really well and able to bridle the whole body as well. And I feel about that way with technology. If you can get a handle on this, and you can use it for God's good purposes and not get into trouble, why then you're a perfect man. Because there is so much danger available. There are so many ways to go wrong with it. Till it requires such purposeful action, such thoughtfulness to make sure that we drive that in the direction that brings us to good actions and helpful things to do with that technology. And so I want to think about some of those dangers this morning and next week as we talk about, I think, the various ways we can go wrong with that. And I hope by doing that to talk about some of the ways we can avoid those pitfalls with technology. One of the things that we can do just right off the bat is not grow too dependent on technology for getting the truth across. The PowerPoint didn't make it from my computer to this one this morning. And so, how fitting, you know. We're gonna go without technology this morning. We're just gonna talk one to another this morning as we think about these things. And so, we want to recognize that we don't have to have that, obviously. I told somebody one time when they're asking about PowerPoint, I said, you know, Brother Waldron does very well without that. And I said, well, when you preach like him, then you can do very well without that. But until then, but at any rate, look over at Matthew chapter 13. Let's begin there. I think one of the biggest things that we are finding with regards to technology is that it is a tremendous distraction. People talk about how quickly the time can seem to just flutter away. We grab our phone out for just a moment, just to take a look at something. We get on the internet, we sit down, and we're just gonna look one thing up. And lo and behold, while we're in the midst of that, there's a link to something else, and we click on that, and then we click on the next thing, and 3 hours later, we don't even remember what we sat down to look up. And that can happen so frequently. And it's more and more the case now that we have these computers on our hips. And let me just tell you, they are a tremendous thing, these cell phones. All of these aspects, all these different aspects of our lives that used to be separate things, we'd go to separate places to find these things, they're all now in one single place. And there's a lot of good reason to be checking on your phone because we use it to figure out where we're going to go. Used to, you'd get out this thing that was printed on paper. Eric and I were talking about this last week, these key maps. You know, just make a whole book of maps. So you can have very detailed things, and you had to look in the index to see where the street name, and it would give you a letter and a number and a page number. You turn over there and find the street, and yeah, that's how we used to get around. I mean, that was harder than Apple Maps. It was terrible. And so we've got that. It tells us where to go. It tells us when our next appointment is. A lot of times we've got our Bibles on there, and so we use it for that. And so there's all sorts of ways we can productively use that. And it is very powerful. You know, there's 30,000 times the processing power that you've got in your smartphone than the computer that put the Apollo 11 on the moon. And so we've got a lot of capacity, a lot of ability, capability, in these things that we use every day. The average American right now checks their phone every 4.3 minutes. So that means you will probably be tempted to grab yours at least 6 or 7 times before the sermon is over. And that's the way it is. We're always grabbing for it. We're always picking it back up. And we're looking at it sometimes we don't even know why. It's just there's time, there's a moment, and we're looking. And what that is doing is giving us so much information, so many possibilities, so many ways to waste away the time and be worried about things that really have no bearing on our lives. Matthew chapter 13 talks about the parable of the sower, and in particular as he focuses on the various pitfalls of the soils that he speaks of, and he goes back and explains those in verse 22. He says there with regards to the thorns, he says, the one on whom the seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. That idea of the distractions, the cares and the concerns, and we are more aware of the cares and concerns, more aware of the wealth of this world, of all the things that the world has to offer than ever before. It's always right in front of us. And we have to be so very careful that we don't allow that to distract us, to take away our attention from what is most important. It's not to say that there's no importance among those things. It's not to say that there's not a place even for the leisure activities that we use our technology for. Certainly for, being aware of what's going on in the world. None of those things are wrong in and of themselves. But are we putting it in its proper place? Are we giving it the proper level of regard, perspective? In Luke chapter 10 and beginning in verse 38 there, we see there in Luke chapter 10 the story of Mary and Martha. And so Martha is distracted by things that have value in and of themselves, but distracted from the fact that the Son of God is in her house. And there is Mary listening to what Jesus has to say. And Martha, who is over here distracted with these other things, looks and she thinks that because this person isn't engaged in the things that she's doing, that Mary's not paying attention to the things that she's paying attention to, she thinks Mary's the one with the problem. And I think the world looks at us this way if we're not as engaged, if we're not, as the current vernacular is, if we're not woke. If we're not aware of all the cares and troubles in the world, you don't know what's happening, the latest crisis all around the world, you're not involved in that, then you're just out of it. And so Martha looks over at Mary and says she doesn't know what she ought to be doing, and she tells Jesus to tell her so. You tell her she ought to be helping me. And of course Jesus, as so is often the case when someone tries to co-opt Jesus, condemn this other person, he turns around to Martha. He says, you're the one with the problem. here is Mary taking what is necessary, focusing on what is necessary. She's got her priorities in order and you do not. And we need to be careful that we do not just allow our phones to determine our priorities, allow the updates and the constant notifications telling us, you need to look at this. Hey, pay attention to me. Facebook right now has just over 2 billion users. Of the 2 billion users on Facebook, 1 billion people check Facebook every day. Can you believe that? What if we had 1 billion people checking the Bible every day? 1 billion people check Facebook every day. Now, I know there may be some in here who are not among that 1 billion, but I guarantee you there's an awful lot who are. Compare the time that you spend checking that or some other form of social media, some other form of constant, instant communication, and compare that with the time that you spend, the purposefulness of the time that you spend checking in to see what God has to say. We have got to be different. We are not people who should be chained and slaves of the technology, but make it our servant. That we are the ones, we don't just go with whatever the demands of the technology are, but that we set the parameters and we decide how often we're going to look at that. And we have the self-control to say there are other things more important than this right now. When you're having a conversation with someone, we're going to talk about this some more in just a minute as we talk about the things that I think technology is doing to our relationships. When you're having a conversation with someone and you feel that buzz on your hip or maybe now on your wrist, what do you think? I've got to know what that is. Let me just say right now, you're sitting in a pew listening to a sermon, listening to things of eternal import, I hope. And if your phone buzzes right now, what is going to be your instinct? I need to know what that says. The odds of you being someone who is receiving at that moment some life-threatening, dangerous situation, some situation that needs your attention at this moment. Jason Strickland is the only one I can think of who that the odds are very great of getting that kind of notification. Maybe Eric. But most of us are not in a position where generally speaking, it's going to be an emergency. In fact, it's probably telling us that somebody has scored a touchdown that we don't even care about. But we got to know. Our technology has trained us to think that that is more important than what is literally going on in front of our faces. We got to know. And so we check. And we make sure it's nothing important. And what we communicate by that is that we have set that up to that level of importance. You know, we used to sit for hours at a time away from any form of communication. I wonder, my kids were going around, and one day, several years back, we passed a payphone, and my girl said, "What is that?" And I said, "Well, that's what we used to have to do when we were away from home and needed to get in touch with somebody. We had to stop somewhere, find one of these things, put money in it, and make the phone call." And they're thinking, "What if you needed to get in touch with somebody while you were driving?" I said, "We didn't. We didn't do that. We waited till we got somewhere." And so we, basically what we've done, and I believe there are advantages to the opportunities of communication and so forth, but we have let technology tell us we must be in constant engagement with the rest of the world. And we are less and less capable of shoving all of that to the side for any amount of time, to be whether it be a one-on-one conversation, whether it be our Bible reading, whether it be this kind of setting. And we are shrinking and shrinking our capacity to be focused on anything. Again, there's more to say about that, and we might address that a little bit more as we talk about our literacy levels and our ability to sit down and focus on large portions of information. But I think that something else that it does is it keeps us from thinking very seriously about anything in particular. It distracts us from focusing on eternal matters because we are so focused on the here and now, the moment. Literally, what is the up-to-the-date moment? We don't want to go 5 seconds without knowing what the latest update on the news is. Haven't you heard? And we all need to hear, and we all need to know 30 seconds after something happens. I think over in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, there's some instructive thoughts about our relationship to the here and now and the things of the here and now. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, and we've used this passage before to make this sort of application, but I think there's a number of different applications we can make. 1 Corinthians 7, beginning of verse 32, it says, "I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. And his interests are divided." The woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. "This I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint on you, but to promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord." Now notice what he says. "But if any man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly towards a virgin..." Excuse me. So he talks about marriage this thing that is valuable, this thing that God has set in order, this thing that God has placed here and said, this is good. And he says, yes, but it's distracting. It's something that can call your attention away from the things of God. So how are we supposed to behave? Well, the one who is married, in this case, is supposed to act like the one who is unmarried. Well, what does that mean? How do we behave as if we're unmarried, if we're married? Well, the idea is that our devotion to that relationship doesn't look like the rest of the world. Because for us, there is something even more important than that. And most people, at least of the world, would take some affront to the notion that God would come before spouse. That He would have more importance than this relationship that we said, this person means everything to me. Well, there's a qualifier there. God means more. And I would put Him first. And so there's a certain detachment that goes along with that. And so the demands that marriage makes on us, we limit those demands and we say, wait a minute. Even though you're my wife, even though you're my husband, that I'm going to put a restraint on those demands when it comes to God. Even to the marriage bed, he says earlier in this very same chapter, there's a time to even put restraints on that and say, we need to devote ourselves to God more fully. And so that all of that has limits that the rest of the world's not going to put limits on, but we are because we're Christians. And so when it comes to technology, we're going to put restraints on that. And we're going to reduce its hold over us and its distraction. And we're not going to allow it to divide our attention to the level that the world allows it to divide its attention. And so we want to take care about that. And we want to grab hold and we want to make those decisions. We want to have the time that is necessary to think on deep things. Over in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15, I think one of the reasons we pick up our phones very often is to, as we might say it, to kill time. So that looks in increasing ways, it can be so very dangerous even. So it starts out, you've got some time, you're in the doctor's office, and you're waiting for them to call you back, and none of the magazines have any interest for you, and now we have this device that we can pull out, and I can actually spend some time doing something I enjoy. And so with this 30,000 times of processing power than what we use to put a man on the moon, we take out our phone and we open up an app and we look at the food that people are eating. And we open up our phone and we open up a game and we launch birds at poorly defended pigs. And we open up our phone and we see just the little stream of consciousness life updates that the whole world is making. But what we don't do is set this down and think and redeem the time and say, how can I use this time well? It's not a thought process. We just pull it out. And we get so instinctive at pulling it out that when you come to a red light, hey, here's 15 seconds. Let me check again. And before long, it's not even at a red light. I'm going down the road and I'm bored. And I'm going to pull my phone out. To the point that we're trying to make laws to figure out how to deal with that. Laws aren't going to fix it. Self-control is what's going to fix it. In fact, all laws are doing is making people get their phones down lower so they don't get caught and the wrecks are getting worse. That's what the statistics show. And it's pitiful. People are so distracted they can't even think, I might lose my life if I look at this. But they're willing to do it anyway. That's how important it is to them. They've got to know. They've got to see. They've got to respond right now. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15, it says, therefore be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. If you take out your phone to kill time, you have got a bad impression of what time is. Time is a blessing. God means for us to look at that and for us to use it and for us to use it purposefully and meaningfully and not let the world just steal it away from. Do you feel like that sometimes? Do you feel like when you've gone into one of those technology comas and you come out of it, you think, well, there's time I'll never get back. I do. I feel that way. And that's what Paul is saying. Don't let that happen. You grab hold of it. And you don't let it be stolen away from you. Now that may bring some discomfort. Because when we are very thoughtful, it causes us to think deeply. And when we think deeply, we recognize need for change. Wouldn't that be wonderful though? If we could think that and then follow through with that. Pascal, back in his day, made some observations about young people generally, but people in general, society in general, and what we find is that things have not changed so much. He said, I have discovered that all the unhappiness of men arises from one single fact, that they cannot stay quietly in their own chamber. Hence it comes that men so much love noise and stir. Hence it comes that the prison is so horrible a punishment. Hence it comes that the pleasure of solitude is a thing incomprehensible. And I think that we know what that feels like. Because when we go into the doctor's office and we realize that we have a 45-minute wait in front of us and we look and our phone has just died. Horror. Now what? We have lost our distracting companion and we have no thoughts to think because it tells us the thoughts to think. It's constantly telling us different things and moving our mind in so many different directions. We have put so much complexity in our lives and in our minds that we cannot simply sit and think quietly. We make it less and less possible all the time. Another writer, reflecting on what Pascal had said about his generation, said, we think we want peace and silence and freedom and leisure, but deep down we know that this would be unendurable to us. We want to complexify our lives. We don't have to, we want to. We want to be hassled and busy. Unconsciously, we want the very thing we complain about. For if we had leisure, we would look at ourselves and listen to our hearts and see the great gaping hole in our hearts and be terrified because that hole is so big that nothing but God can fill it. That's the kind of thoughts we need to think. But this keeps us from thinking those thoughts. And so we want to push that to the side. You've got to actively push that to the side. I think about this too. When I'm making usage of my technology, I think of a passage like Hebrews chapter 12. So Hebrews chapter 11, he lays out all of these great men and women of faith and shows the strength and the courage, the willingness to endure all sorts of difficulties and strife. And so he paints those pictures and then he says in chapter 12 in verse 1, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. And I think what would they think of my usage of technology? What if I add Paul to that cloud of witnesses? What would he think if I explained to him how my day went when I spent all day playing games and looking at Facebook updates? It is embarrassing to think sometimes about that cloud of witnesses watching and what they endured, and I'm over here upset because I've lost my signal. And now what? And the things that they endured to glorify God. I need to put some controls on it. So how do I do that? What are some things we can think about? Well, number one, I think that what we can do is stop letting this tell us when to look at it. You know, every time you install an app, it tells you, we would like to send you notifications. Hit the no button. If you don't know how to make it stop, somebody here will help you ask your grandchild. All right? There is a way to make your phone stop telling you, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. And so you've got to put some distance there. Another thing that you can do is set some times where the phone is just off limits for you. There needs to be time in every day where this phone is off limits, where technology is off limits. I'm walking away from that. Make it the first few hours of the day. That is a very good time for that. And you separate yourself. Further, set a time during the week, a day during the week. Could you think you could do that? Could you go a whole day without looking at any technology? And you say, what about an emergency? Okay. Leave the ringer on so you can hear it. If there's an emergency, somebody can get in touch with you. But set that time where you step away from that and you put some distance and you prove to yourself, I don't need that. I don't need that all the time, especially. And then maybe even set some time during the year where you go even multiple days without that, a whole week. Go on a vacation where there is no cell signal. Go somewhere and disconnect yourself. And if you think, well, what will happen in an emergency? The same thing that happened 100 years ago in the emergency. The world will keep turning without you. And they'll tell you about it when you get back. And so we need to not let the world tell us how connected we need to be. Let God tell us how connected. And what He says is you need to be more connected to me than anything else that's going on out there. And so make that time. Further still, with regards to parents, you must limit your children. They are not developed enough in their self-control and their maturity to decide those things for themselves. You recognize that in every other aspect of their lives. You need to recognize it here. You got to make some decisions. This is how much time you're allowed on this device today. After that, you are done. There are lots of different ways to go about that. I can tell you about all sorts of apps you can install. I have one where all the apps go away at a certain time. The only thing that's left is the phone, so that if they're out and it's an emergency, I can still get in touch with them. But everything else shuts down. And I read the reviews on this app, and I'll tell you what. The best reviews were the ones that the kids ranted and said, "This is terrible." Right, yes, this is what I'm looking for. I was right in the middle of a game. I know. And it teaches you to pull away from that. And so if my children want to play a particular game, they have to come to me and they have to say, "Can I play this game?" All right, how long are you going to play? Okay, that's how long. And then it's going to shut back down. But you have those conversations, and don't just assume that a child who picks something up that is so capable of destroying their souls are going to figure it all out on their own. It's insane. There are people who would not trust their children with a loaded weapon. They would not trust their children with a vehicle. They would not trust their children to cook dinner at night. But they'll trust them with this. Those other things may damage them physically, but this will kill their souls. And so you gotta take the reins on that. And you gotta harness that if you're gonna allow your children access to those things. Well, then there is also the shallowness of relationships that this creates. Let me say that with regards to this, and really all of these points, that this is not inevitable. It's not the only way it could happen. But statistically speaking, this is what's happening. And let me say with regards to statistics, with regards to studies, the world is figuring this out. The world is paying attention to the damage this is doing. They're doing studies. They're paying attention to the damage this is doing to children. And I think we are so blind if we as Christians look back and say, well, that won't happen to our children. No, it'll do the same thing to our children that it's doing to the children in the world. It'll have the same effect on them. We need to value face-to-face relationships. God's people, the New Testament writers valued that. Over in 2 John there in verse 12, John says, "Though I have many things to write to you, I do not want to do so with paper and ink, but I hope to come to you and speak face to face so that your joy may be full." That's the desired effect. That's the desired relationship. It doesn't mean that there's no place for the written word. Obviously, he is writing them. Obviously, Paul writes letters. But Paul also regularly says, "I long to come and see you." That's what he says to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 4. I want to have that face-to-face relationship. We are so rapidly moving away from face-to-face communication. And everything is digital to the point that people in the same room will have digital conversations. A comedian a while back was talking about being in a coffee shop and these two girls were furiously texting back and forth. And then one of them looked up and said to the other one, "I know, right?" Right back to... They're communicating here. And for a moment, they looked up and had a voice-to-voice conversation. And right back to this. I see husbands and wives sending messages to each other on Facebook, asking what their dinner plans are. I'm like, what are you doing? You're having this conversation in front of the whole world. Do you not have conversations with your spouse anymore? Is Facebook the way that you do that? That's terrible. And so we need to make a point to have those face-to-face relationships. The world in its family studies have shown the advantages, the statistical advantages of families who sit down and have meals together. Now that should be just common sense and obvious. It's not, apparently. But I think that this desire among these men that this is where I want the relationship. That's where the relationship is best. It's where it's most meaningful. And the more distance, the more barriers we put between that, even paper and ink, is a problem. And so let's sit down. And let's sit down together. And so I think that families should make it a point to sit down at times and make sure that we have that. And make sure that technology is not a part of that. That there's nothing in between us, in between our face-to-face communication. I think sometimes we also have fooled ourselves into thinking we have meaningful relationships, that we have a host of friends because somebody I never met clicked a button and then I did and now we're friends. How did they even know what my name was? Well, somebody that they knew who knew somebody else who knew somebody else knew me. And so now we're friends. When really we have fewer people than ever that we really know deeply because we don't communicate deeply. We communicate in blurbs. We communicate in 140 characters or less. We communicate even less than that. We communicate in pictures. So we don't even want to go to all the trouble of typing out words. Let me find a smiley or frowny face that will say all the things that I want to say to you. And somebody said 100 years from now they're going to look back and they're going to be looking at our texts like we look at hieroglyphics and try to figure out what were they saying to each other. So we've reduced our communication down and down and down till it has no meaning and we can't even have a deep relationship. But face-to-face communication forces us to be more thoughtful about the words we say. And that's another thing, that when we don't have that face-to-face, when there is not the burden of having to deal with the reaction that you see right in front of you, that you get less careful and more bold and really more careless about the other person at the other end of that conversation. And you say things that you would never say to someone's face. The Apostle Paul, when he was writing to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, he talks about the sorrow, that he knows he brought them sorrow, and then he knows his first letter did that. And he didn't do it for that purpose. That wasn't his goal, was to make them sad. But he says he's writing this letter so that when he comes, it can be with joy. And he writes his letters, even his communications that are distant, he writes with the thought of, I want our face-to-face relationship to be a good one. He doesn't write saying, well, I'll probably never have to see these people. No, I'm writing because I am going to have to see these people. And I want to write in such a way that keeps that in mind, that these are people I have real flesh and blood relationships with. And so we need to spend more time thinking, and technology automatically reduces the time that we might take. We have to fight to put more time into that. We go through and we type so fast and we hit send and we don't even recognize, we don't even look back and see that autocorrect has made our message undiscernible. We spend no time actually thinking about what did I just say. You sit down with a piece of paper and a pen and you take a little bit more care about what you put down there. You ever done that? You ever typed a response very quickly, hit send, and then look back over it and think, oh wait. Well, you can't. The oh wait is done. You've already hit send. And so it trains us to be less thoughtful about what we say. And if we're going to be more thoughtful, that's going to have to be on us. It's not going to do that for us. It's pushing us in that direction. And so we've got to push back in this direction to be more thoughtful. I think it also, it causes us to become judges of the whole world. Because we have access to so many things that so many people are saying, and we spend our lives being incensed by what the world is saying. And it feeds on rage, it feeds on anger, it feeds on getting people worked up. There's a fellow who I do not know, but we are friends. I've never met him before. But he's been posting some things recently, and they've been getting hundreds of comments and lots of notifications. And I look back to see his timeline, and generally speaking, he posts fairly innocuous things, some silly things, and they get one or two likes and a couple of comments maybe. But then he posted something controversial, and boy, it lit up. Then what happens? Well, now I'm motivated. And now my conversation and the things that I write about and the things that I talk about become taken up with this tide, and this tide is driven by anger. And we get online and we want to make sure that we set everybody straight. And we look to far-flung places of the world, and we want to make sure that this fellow who I have never met, probably never will meet, who lives thousands of miles away from me, I need to make sure that he understands he's wrong. I have been so wrapped up in that before. My wife has come into the room at 1 o'clock in the morning saying, "What are you doing? Setting the record straight. Someone on the internet is wrong, and I am going to fix it." You know, I never have. I can't think of a single occasion where at the end of that discussion someone said, "Well, I have completely changed my mind." And so we get so wrapped up in that. And guess what I'm doing? I'm ignoring the person who actually lives in the house with me. I'm paying attention to everybody else in the world, but the person who sits by my side each and every day. And I think that this also can get us worked up from the standpoint that we project what we're seeing in the rest of the world even on the people that are near us. We had a young man live with us for 2 semesters. And I need to tell you just a little bit about, because I need to set up this story so that you understand. When we met him, he had come down from up north, and I didn't know him. I knew a man who knew his grandmother, and this man had told me this young man's coming to Montgomery to go to school. We picked him up at the bus stop. We took him to the school, and the accommodations that the school provided were horrifying to any godly person. And I looked at that and I said, "You do not have to stay here. We have a bed at our house that you can sleep in." And he looked at that again. He said, "I will take you up on that." Okay, so he stayed with us that semester and then stayed with us the following semester. But the school that he went to was so stoked in racial rage that he was constantly coming home. He was a young black man, and he was constantly coming home, and we saw the anger building up. And one time I came home from a trip where I had been building a church building. I was cut off from technology. And I came home, and he asked me what I thought about a situation in Louisiana where there had been some display of racism. And I said, "I don't know anything about that situation." He said, "You don't know?" I said, "No, I don't know anything about that." He said, "Well, here." And he gave me an article. This article was written by someone in London who knew all the details and said that this situation in Louisiana was a microcosm of all the racism in America. I said, "Man, I still don't know about what's going on. And there's really not anything I can do about that. And in fact, the best thing I think we can do is let the people in that town work that out. Because we can't help that at all. But what I can do is focus on what I've got to do. And I've got a lot of work to catch up on here, so I'm just not going to give the whole night over to worrying about that. He says, you just don't care. It's not that I don't care. I don't care near as much about that as what I've got to do right here. Because that's my job. That's what I can actually do something about. We went on to have a conversation. I asked him, I said, do you think I'm a racist? And he said, well, I'm not sure. I said, I picked you up at a bus stop and gave you a bed in my house for 6 months, and you're not sure if I'm a racist or not? He is more engaged with relationships halfway across the world than the one in the very house he's living in. And we do the same thing. And we get so stoked up. And we're so focused on everything out, and we don't even know or recognize the things, the evidence that's in the house right in front of us. It's a shallow relationship. And I think that we need to be people who, as Romans chapter 12 says, outdo one another in showing honor. Rather than, as James chapter 4 says, James chapter 4 and verse 11, do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother or speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. There's only one lawgiver and judge, and one who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? And don't worry about all those relationships that you can do nothing with while killing the relationships that you actually have an opportunity with. Taking away from these things in order to give your life over to these things. We need to focus right there. There are people who I guarantee you this week will sit down and type paragraphs of defense of the truth and tearing down all of the false arguments, but won't have a single conversation with a teenager that lives in their house this week. And they're going to lose not only the souls of those people who really are only interested in a conversation of rage, but they're going to lose that soul that's right there in their house. And if you ask them to wake up and think about it, which is more important to you? They'd say, oh, well, my teenager's more important. Does it show? Are you trying to build a relationship there? Where's your focus? And so what do we need to do about that? Well, again, we need to make face-to-face time a priority. And we need to say that when we have this sit-down, this doesn't show up. This isn't a part of that. We need to have times where we set that aside and have actual conversation. And we need to make that a priority. And we need to make building physical relationships a priority. And just in general, in our conversation with one another, we need to resist the temptation to pick this up. I was having a study with a fella a while back. And we were talking about things, and we're talking about God's Word, and we're talking about eternal things, and he checked his watch 7 times in 10 minutes. It's, you know, the kind that gives you notifications. And I'll tell you what, I just told him, I said, if this is not that important to you, I've got other things I can be doing. If you're not interested in this, and that's what you're communicating with people, is I'm really not interested. I'm not near as interested in you as I am in whatever this thing's saying to me right now. And so show people you're interested. Be willing to put that down. When the phone rings, let it ring sometimes. And let it buzz and let it be something that you get to later, because this immediate thing, this face-to-face, has that level of importance. And we need to reduce the number of people that we are paying attention to. There is a wonderful button on Facebook called Hide. It's the best feature they introduced. Let me just suggest, use it liberally. Go through your friends list, all the people who say things that get you stoked up and make you angry and try to get you drawn into those sorts of rage conversations. Hide. don't need that in my life. I've got enough to work on right here without fixing everybody else. It's fixing the whole world. Go to your Twitter feed and just start reducing. Just start sifting through what's worthwhile and what's not. And don't let Facebook or Twitter or technology in general come and say, here's somebody else you should be following. No, I'll decide that, thank you. I'll decide who I'm paying attention to, not you. And I'm going to let God be my guiding influence on who I give my attention, who I want to develop a relationship with. Well, there's several more things to talk about along these lines. I think that these are not even the worst dangers. And we'll see that as we go along. I think a lot of them get more sinister. I think a lot of them become much more problematic, much more dangerous as we dig a little bit deeper. And so we'll be doing that as we continue on. This is not a diatribe against technology, but it is one against carelessness. It is one against a lack of self-control. That's what we're talking about. This is not the problem. We are the problem. And so this is what I got to get a handle on. But I've got to get a handle on this so that I can get a handle on this. This can be a problem, just like the tongue, just like any other thing that God has given us. And I hope that you will have that sort of focus, that sort of self-control that will point your attention back towards God. If you're here this morning, maybe you feel the notions, the wastefulness of a life spent focusing on what the world has to say. The wastefulness of taking the whole day and giving it over to things that just have no value. You don't feel any better at the end of the day. No improvement. And a lot of people are feeling that. People more than ever are wondering, what's the point? This is the only place you're going to find a solid answer. It's the only place you're going to find a satisfying answer. The only place you're going to find something big enough to fill the hole that if you contemplate it, you will realize is there. Fear God and keep His commandments. This is the whole duty of man. That's the point. And if you're here this morning and you recognize that that's the point, but it's not something you've submitted to, we pray that you will this morning, that we could rejoice with you if you would make your life right with Him. Why don't you come forward while we stand and while we sing.